Okay, this is Jay Shaft. We're back with Thought Bomb Radio for part two of the interview with Private First Class Chris Gorman. Before we went to the break, Chris, you were talking about on Monday coming up, and I don't have a calendar in front of me. I do believe that would be on the 16th. Is that correct?
I believe so. Yes, 16th.
You are supposed to report back to fly over to rejoin your unit. Is that correct?
That's correct. I'm supposed to leave and report into Atlanta to sign back in for leave.
And what time do you have to do that?
Whenever the plane would land in Atlanta.
Okay, so you basically have to leave on Monday morning, and you are deciding you're not going to do that. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, now what are your plans for Monday? What are you going to do?
I'm going to report back to the rear detachment unit at Fort Hood, and I'm going to tell the commander that I'm not going back because I was told I'd be discharged. That we had to wait till it got back. Now I'm back and I want to be discharged, and if I need to hand in another CO packet to do that, then I'll hand in another CO packet to do that, but I will not be going back. I will be making sure that I get discharged, like they said.
Now, what if it comes down to you being arrested and imprisoned for this, as have been about 30 other people that have refused? What would you let them arrest you?
No, not without a fight. But by myself and my wife and all the supporters that are out there, I don't think what they're doing is right, and they have no right to do that.
Yeah, and really, basically, I've read the charter and the UCMJ and all the paperwork on the conscientious objector status, which I will be posting with this interview. And for anybody listening, you can go to www.soldiersrights.com. That's a website that Chris and his wife, Heather Gorman, run. Is that correct, Chris?
That's correct.
And that has an outline and a timeline of all the incidents that have happened with this case. And you do have some other information for people in this situation, is that correct?
That's correct. Any branches of the service, who you can get in contact with, what their rights are, legal help, I mean, anything that anybody needs. And if something isn't on the web page that they need, they can always, there's a contact area they can contact us, and we can lead them in the right direction.
Okay, and let me repeat that again. It's www.soldiersrights.com, and there's also a website from GI Rights. It's called you can go to www.girights.com, and it explains the conscientious objector paperwork, the process, and there's a hotline that you can call to get in touch with them, which I will provide at the end of this interview. Anybody that needs to be counseled for military service, whether you're in the reserves or anything, you can call the hotline and get some free advice on what your rights are. And if you are considering filing conscientious objector status, you can go through the application process with them and get the paperwork. Now, tell me a little bit about that, Chris. What would you have to do on Monday to refile as a conscientious objector?
To file again?
Yes.
Yeah, you're breaking up. I can't hear you.
Okay, what would you have to do on Monday? Like, if you were to go in and file for conscientious objector status, can you kind of explain to us how you fill out the paperwork and what you would declare?
Well, there's I don't want to say application, but there's a series of questions that you have to fill out, a process. You need to answer their questions and explain, you know, why you feel the way you do. Then there's a series of interviews you have to go through. You need to be interviewed by a military chaplain. You need to be interviewed by a psychiatrist. And you need to be given a interview by an investigating officer where you have to prove your case to get him to recommend his approval or disapproval for your case.
Okay, so they do have to assign you an individual officer for your case, a legal officer, is that correct?
Well, it doesn't have to be a legal officer. The first time I handed in officer from the battalion, of which I did not know. Someone who was not associated with me directly every day.
Okay, so they're supposed to assign an impartial officer to the case just to oversee it. Then I get what that is. Now, during this process, it's basically you having to go through all the steps to get the paperwork filed. Is that correct?
They say it's not. They say once you have everything on the checklist that you're supposed to have, you submit that packet, and then it's supposed to go through your chain of command all the way up to division, general and division commander. And then if you appeal it because you don't agree with the recommendations of, or the outcome of the recommendations of the investigating officer and officers all the way up to brigade level, you can appeal that, and it'll go all the way to the Pentagon level.
Now, during that period, though, as you found out, they will deploy you to combat before they've completed their investigation. Is that correct?
Oh, that's correct. They'll do anything to keep their numbers. That's all anybody is them is a number.
Now, during this whole process, I mean, as far as I know, and I'm going to state this as what I've seen, Chris Gorman is the only person who has filed the status and been denied and served combat in the face of his objections. And as far as I know right now, there are some other soldiers over there who have tried to file and got through the first few steps, but no one else has come forward and spoken out as openly. And I got to say something, Chris. You know, did you feel kind of like you were leading the way for other guys while you were over there?
Did I feel that way? No, I did not feel that way. That's what I was being told, though, by my wife and through some of the people that I've talked to back here, you know, thanking me for what I was doing, and I didn't really understand what that was until I, you know, actually got to talk with them and find out what they were thinking and how they were feeling.
Now, let me ask you something. With your status the way you filed, you are opposed to all wars. Is that correct?
Can you say that again?
With the way you filed your status as a conscientious objector, you're opposed to all military action and wars, is that correct?
That's correct, especially the violence, and then come to find out that it wasn't just the violence that they needed to worry about. It was making sure that your beliefs weren't being trampled on. I mean, you know, they're telling me that I can't practice my religion on Sunday, I can't keep my Ten Commandments if it goes against what they have, that I need to place their mission first when I should be placing God's mission before anybody else's. And they don't like that. They, being the military, does not like that when you listen to somebody else besides them.
So, I mean, it's like if you follow the whole thing, you know, we have God Bless America plastered everywhere over here, and Bush has said it in his speeches. The commanders have said, you know, God bless our troops. But it seems like when you actually have, in, you know, from what you've said and from what I've heard from you, when you actually apply that to your own value system, they reject that. Is it like almost like throwing it back in your face?
Well, right. I mean, it's very hypocritical, if you will. They'll say, you know, they'll have a chaplain pray over the whole everybody that's leaving. Like before we left to deploy, they had a chaplain say a mass prayer for everybody's safety and so on and safe travels. Well, they do that, I think, just to I don't even want to say comfort some people, because a lot of people don't believe in that. And for somebody who does, like myself and some other people that are out there, you know, take that seriously. But when you try to act on it, and when you try to, you know, really ask God for your protection, to pray and so on and so forth, they don't like that because they don't think that God has anything to do with it.
That seems, well, it's a double standard that I see with this whole war. We say one thing and do exactly the opposite, and then, you know, lie about it, and then 6 months later, oh yes, we did that, but it wasn't as bad as they said it was. You know, it was for everybody's own good. So, I mean, I'm torn every day by this, you know, the fallacy that I see them say, you know, the preaching, and then what I hear from you guys that have been over there is just, it's shocking sometimes to hear about it. You know, it's hard to even admit or think about that the U.S. would be promoting democracy but stifling their own soldiers. Sorry, that was my rhetoric. I'm going to apologize for that for everybody listening, but I'm in this all the way with quite a few people that have just been run amok on by the system. So now, Chris, how do you feel about that with the freedom and everything? Do you feel that you actually have freedoms as a soldier, or are they impinging on the soldier's freedom right now?
Oh, when you don't have, as a soldier, you don't have any freedom. You try to express yourself and be free and so on and so forth. There's just, you can't. They won't let you. Because then that means they don't have any control over you. So they think.
So basically, you're just supposed to be a mindless soldier with orders in their head doing what the military says and not questioning it in any way, shape, or form from what you've seen. Is that correct?
That's right. They want you to be a robot. They don't like it if you have compassion.
And you're supposed to be over there to help the Iraqi people. I find that very, very ironic that not wanting to kill them would be a conflict with the military mission. I mean, it's mind-numbing to think that we could have that fallacy even allowed, but like I said, every day. Now, with what's going on over there with the violence, I was talking about this earlier when we were not recording this, and we were talking about some of the insurgent attacks that were going on because of violence from U.S. soldiers, say in a situation where they went through a village and mistakenly killed somebody the next day there, or within a few days, there's usually a retaliatory attack. Have you heard a lot of those incidences occurring over there, or did you kind of have an awareness of that?
I haven't heard anything that is why they've been attacked. I have not heard about that directly. But the way I feel is that, and the way I notice that Iraqi civilians look at it is if they look at the coalition forces as one whole, not as an individual shot my brother, killed one of my family members, what have you. But they look at it as the United States did it, and they all must pay for it. So, I mean, that one soldier who's in the Humvee that rolled past an ID that they exploded may have had nothing to do with it, and he could just be bringing supplies to another a farm or something along that line, and, you know, not be having to do with any violence of it at all, but they don't look at it that way. They look at it as one whole.
Yeah, I know I've talked to some civilian affairs people, and they say that they've been getting attacked because they're the ones working with the people hand in hand, and it's usually a day or two after an attack they will come into a village and get fired on or have their convoy hit, and you know it seems like it's an endless cycle. We have fallen into that, it seems like, recently.
Yep, that's right. Everybody's one. If the guy next to you shoots somebody, you're just as guilty as that person next to you that actually did the crime, as far as an Iraqi is concerned.
And you know, that's ironic because we also have done almost the same thing with, you know, like I talk to a lot of soldiers, and it's all, they call them Hajis. They're all enemies. You know, you don't know who's who over there, and you get to the point where everybody that moves is an enemy, but yet, you know, I see people get upset when the Iraqis apply the same thing to the Americans. You're all the enemy, and it looks like a two-sided.
Right. It's a double-edged sword, and we want something different than what we're giving them. You know, I mean, we're going to treat them all the same, but they're different, and then when, like you said, if they treat us all the same as that other person, then we have a problem with it. And that's not right. And see, and that's another big issue that I have, as far as not agreeing with what's going on over there. I feel as though we're trying to enforce our standards, our way of life on them, which they don't want. And now that they don't want to change over to our way of life, now we have the problem. You know, there's probably people who don't want to be want to live the way we do, and we want them to, and they're going to fight for their way of life.
We're giving them democracy that they don't want, you know, and they're openly showing that. Now I'm gonna get on to something else. While you were over there, did you have any experiences with soldiers that were being affected by the combat and having stress problems and mental problems, or I mean, did you pick up that general state of alertness yourself?
I haven't really. I know people that have, I don't want to say trouble, but it's just, you know, a lot of people don't care what's going on because they just go along with the flow, so to speak. Other people who don't really want to stand up and say what they need to say because they're afraid of what the military might do to them, you know, a lot of them come talk to me and say, you know, this isn't right, this is how I'm feeling, whatever. I try to be a support channel for that. I picked up on a lot of people having an issue with the stress because of, they started to have a combat stress, group meeting every, once or twice a week, you know, to help people cope with what's going on. And, like, with me, the big issue was is, you know, why is this such an issue? You know, I mean, if this is what God wanted, one, he would have delivered our enemies to us. Two, we would be gone already. Everything would be taken care of. God would have delivered them to us, and we wouldn't have had a problem. So I don't know. I don't. That's why I don't believe this is right. I don't believe that what we're doing is the right thing.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to be right back with Chris Gorman, and we're going to finish up this interview. So stay tuned to Thought Bomb Radio, Shock and Awe for the Mind, and we will be right back.